This is John.
This is Boys.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Super Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. And like the name implies, we're going to talk about Super Nintendo games. And we do it sort of semi-chronologically as they came out 21 years ago. So we are up to June of 1995. And there was one pretty notable game that came out at that time. It was Earthbound.
Yep.
So we're going to talk about Earthbound for a bit. Have you guys played it?
I've watched you.
Yes?
Yes. Good.
Ryan, any exposure to the...
Actually, not really. No, I never played this game.
You played Mother 3.
I have played Mother 3.
So you have
the one where they're like, good news, bad news? Is that the one?
A dragon killed your mom.
Was it a dragon?
Something killed his mom.
It was like, and then you're like, here's a 2x4. Mysterious weapon. Bad news is I found it in your mom's back. And
yes,
she's
that's
dead.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty harsh way to deliver some news. Well, so, yeah. So...
He's trying to ease him into it. So, mm-hmm. I mean, just like...
There is a silver lining there. We have a tool for vengeance. Earthbound was developed by a company called Ape, as well as HAL Labs, and of course published by Nintendo. Ape is a funny little developer they were founded by the series director-producer, Shigesato.
I was about to say they were founded by apes.
They were not, no. it was founded by a guy, Shigesato Itoi. And he is a writer, and he does some advertising, I believe, as well, in Japan. He's not really a game designer. Like, really, the only three games he has made are the Mother games, the Earthbound series. And actually, this developer, Ape, was dismantled after making Mother 2, which is Earthbound. There's a couple of a cool little stories. Like, the people who worked at Ape and HAL Labs developing this game, it kind of became like a who's who of Japanese game developers. So one of the guys, Sunekuzu, yeah, I said it right the first time. Should I make Wes read these names? Ishihara. Sunekuzu, Ishihara, and some other former Ape staff after Ape dismantled went on to form the game development company
Creatures.
Creatures.
I'm looking at them right now.
Who works, of course, on the Pokemon series.
Yeah, they're still developing a ton of games.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. And actually, the Ishihara, he resigned from Creatures, I believe, in the early 2000s, and they were taken over by another guy who worked on the Earthbound series, Hirokazu Tanaka, Hip Tanaka, who is a musician and a hardware designer for Nintendo. He worked on a lot of like the sound chip engineering type stuff. Oh. And he was also one of the guys who was pretty influential in designing the Game Boy. The Earthbound was directed by Shigesato Itoi, as I mentioned before, and then also produced by Itoi and a guy, Satoru Iwata, who was the president of HAL Laboratories at the time and went on to become president of Nintendo back in 2003, who passed away around this time last year.
Hmm.
And actually, there's a pretty funny story surrounding the development of this game. So development of Mother 2, Earthbound, began just after Mother 1, Earthbound Beginnings, as it's called in North America, was released in Japan. I believe
Is that a game we did not get?
That was on the NES. We did not get it. It was actually fully localized, but we didn't get it. Nintendo decided not to release it until last year. Like, they released on the Wii U Virtual Console last year, the fully localized version, yeah. So, actually, Mother 2, Earthbound, was the only game in the Earthbound series that we had gotten until last year. When this game was, I believe, Mother 1 came out in 1990 in Japan. It was a pretty late NES game. It was just on the tail end of the NES life cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So, they started development for Mother 2 directly after that, and this game was mired in development hell for 4 years.
Yeah, I was gonna say, if they're coming out with it 5 years later,
mm-hmm.
So
4 years into development, I believe HAL Laboratories was working with them and developing it at the time, but then they brought in a bunch more staff, and one of the guys who came in to help sort of solve the development issues of this game was Satoru Iwata. We mentioned him before, and there's not a whole lot of information about what was bogging them down in development. It was a lot of programming issues, but I couldn't really find what specifically were the programming issues. But basically, there's a couple of interviews around the internet that you can find where you have both Iwata and Itoi like, sitting around a table talking about this exchange they had, where basically Iwata comes in after they've been developing this game for 4 years, and he looks at like their program and says, well, we can either keep on doing it this way and be done in 2 years, or we can scrap all this programming, start from scratch, and be done in 6 months.
Jeez.
So they did that.
I understand.
So they scrapped everything. They started programming from scratch, and 6 months later, it took them about a year to get it out, but 6 months later, all of the principal programming was done, and then they were just refining it. Just like this, and at the time, like, Iwata was considered like this whiz kid of programming, and it came in and saved this project from just being stuck in development hell for 4 years. Over to the game itself. I spoke about this game back when it came out on the Wii U Virtual Console, which was like September, October of 2014, somewhere in there. And I was pretty positive on it then.
Not now.
I'm still generally positive.
The way you worded it, I was like, oh, I'm pretty positive then. What was I thinking?
So one thing I did say was that it's probably not in the top 5 of Super Nintendo RPGs. There's a lot of them. And it's probably not even a top 10 or top 15 Super Nintendo game.
Okay.
And I stand by that. It's almost assuredly not a top 15 Super Nintendo game. When we get to ranking the Super Nintendo games in a little while, you know, we'll iron all that out.
Are we going to rank all of them?
No.
I think we should start at the beginning.
Every single one of them.
Okay, I've actually thought
about it. So, Mahjong Deluxe. Really didn't live up to
Super Mahjong Deluxe. I've actually thought about this, and I'm leapfrogging off of an idea that Ryan had. He was talking about, like, each one of us making a list, a ranking of our favorite Super Nintendo games, and kind of using our rankings to score them, and then just the top 15 scored out of all of us.
Yeah.
Would.
So that the higher you rank something, the more point value you would have.
And then from we're gonna like fight on this too, because you know whenever John and I did rankings, we'd be like, well, you're wrong.
You always were.
Gengar's actually number one because he has a Mega Evolution because we're counting that.
Well, be right.
Even
more
though we're
often.
Not writing it from this.
Be right more often. I won't say that you're always wrong.
Well, I mean, we all have different perspectives, different ways we like to play games. Like, I'm sure yours is going to be littered with a ton of RPGs, and I'll probably only have a couple.
Yeah, you're probably right.
And I mean, Wes, I mean, I have no idea.
You I think you
incredible.
Guys should just do that, because I never really played a whole lot of Super Nintendo.
Just like put Mega Man X in there.
Yeah, pretty much. Mega Man X is number one, because that's the only game of it I really played. And
I think
Toy Story.
We're not putting Toy Story in the top 15, absolutely not.
Come on, it's Toy Story, dude.
No.
You get to play as Woody as you fight your way into Andy's heart.
I wonder if how similar that is to the...
Like, literally?
I would love to watch that spoof, that parody.
I wonder how similar that is to the...
The toys go insane and just start murdering people. It's small soldiers, except, like, R.
Yeah, exactly.
Raid R small soldiers.
Mm. Oh, that movie sucked. So
Whoa, you watch your mouth.
That was, if I remember correctly, that was a guy named Joe Dante who directed Gremlins. Man, small soldiers.
That's funny.
You watch your mouth, though, small soldiers.
When was the last time you watched it?
Probably a year ago.
Alright, weird.
The last time I saw it, which probably was like 5 years ago.
That was my childhood, man.
I saw it when it came out.
I remember not liking it as much as when I was a kid, or when I was younger watching it. I feel like that the most recent time I watched it, I had a significantly less impression of what I thought the movie should be.
Well, but when was the last time that happened? We watched a movie and seen from the kid, like, I enjoy it more. Like, when was the last time that happened?
Event Horizon.
Apparently you guys talked about E.T. E.T. is a movie that I like even more. Like, I liked it all right when I was a kid, and now I think it's fantastic.
We haven't posted this show yet, but me and Wes did a space world where we just went through the plot of E.T. We didn't really dissect the movie. We just tried to describe the plot.
Do you remember what it is?
You just talk about how they're playing Dungeons & Dragons and eating pizza all the time.
No, I don't
know. Oh, you guys haven't watched the movie recently.
Right, it's been 15 years. Like, we tried to describe scene by scene what the movie's
going
doing.
On.
The kid's opening the kid discovers E.T. when he leaves the family's kitchen from eating pizza and playing Dungeons & Dragons.
Okay.
So it's just this cool little nod to what dorky kids were doing
in the
80s.
What we should do?
What's that?
Like, you should probably edit this part out with Super Nintendo Show, but what we could do is record another thing after this. Have Ryan listen to it real quick, because it's only like, what?
15 minutes.
And then have Ryan, like, tell us where we're wrong.
Which you got wrong about the like your interpretation of what E.T. is.
I'd be down.
Yeah.
So I think that as long as we're taking this tangent.
Yeah.
I don't know how Wes landed on this issue, but as we were describing the plot, I was kind of on the government side.
Yeah.
As it turned out. I was like, these guys, like, they're not trying to kill E.T. They're not trying to hunt him down and kill him. Yeah. They're trying to save his life. And who better than the government to have a radio to contact his people? E.T. could actually use a real radio transmitter rather than shit from this kid's garage.
Well, it's a little softer. Like, I mean, do you guys know much about Close Encounters?
Yeah.
Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Another Spielberg movie, but mm-hmm. that's very much adult. I feel like that movie is like Empire Strikes Back, and this is like Return of the Jedi.
Hmm.
You know, where okay. it's like, it's clearly softened up. Kids are meant to enjoy it. You know, you're not yeah. going to see anything.
Teaching kids not to trust the government.
Yeah. Well, even that. And then there was that remake of it. Remember that? I think South Park did a hilarious spoof of where they removed the guns and replaced them with walkie-talkies.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they really wanted to inoculate the entire presence of them.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I don't know, again, because this movie is G. Like, it's meant for the smallest of children should be able to
mm-hmm.
not, you know, find anything that offends them.
But funnily enough, you enjoyed it more recently than when you were a kid.
Yeah, it was, and the thing is, I never really liked E.T., and I still don't like the character of E.T. I think he's just kind of goofy and silly.
Just not like the design?
I was really, it was a nostalgia trip. I liked mm-hmm. the environment. I think Spielberg made a great movie. It's shot really, really well.
Why are we doing this in the Super Nintendo or not?
Why are we? I saw little glimpses of what he was doing fucking Jurassic Park in this.
We can just tack this on to the end of our regular one.
No,
we haven't posted it yet.
We're going to power through this.
Okay.
So, video games. Back to the Super Nintendo.
Dear God.
So, Earthbound.
How was the film adaptation?
See, we're going to figure that it's called Earthbound because you're not bound for Earth. You're on Earth.
Okay. I don't know. I don't really know much about the naming convention, like why it was called what it was called.
Yeah, that seems weird.
I mean, if you're... Or like Earthbound, you could interpret that as like is something is bound for Earth, like they're headed for Earth as their destination.
Yeah, like Homeward Bound, like the dogs and the cat are trying to get home. I mean,
let's talk about that movie for 20 minutes now.
Oh my god, the dog talks.
So yeah, I'm not sure why it's named what it's named, but the game, like getting back to why it would not make a top 15, I just think it has way too many design issues to even consider for a top spot here. Most of the design issues, and I think I probably mentioned these a while back, but I didn't really hammer this point quite as hard, come from a lot of your inventory management and also the economy of the game and how those things hinder your progression. You have super limited inventory space. You have four characters. You don't start with them all. They're all peppered in throughout the game. And they all only have like 12 or 14 slots to carry stuff. And four of those slots will always be taken up by their gear, their equipment.
Mm-hmm.
You not only like wear your equipment, you also have to hold it. So it takes up your inventory space. And then there's even more stuff that are key items that you don't ever want to let go of. Like your...
A lift key. Right? A coin case.
Essentially.
An SS pass.
And then actually, I think that is something that we talked about when this game was released on the Wii U Virtual Console, is that it has a lot of similarities to Pokemon, which makes sense because apes became creatures who helped with creating the Pokemon series.
Apes were always creatures, John.
Shut the fuck up. God damn it. I'm trying to talk about something important here. There's, totally lost my train of thought. Thanks, Wes.
Yes!
So you have these items that you can't let go of, much like in Pokemon. You don't want to let them go because you don't know if they're going to be important later. It's a little bit more refined in Pokemon. You know exactly when you should just get rid of them.
You know, the Pokeflute.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So you have things like
rid of the Pokeflute.
Oh, I stashed that thing as soon as those Snorlax are gone.
What are you talking about? No. That way you don't have to walk around with Awakenings.
I never walk around with Awakenings. And eventually you can just buy full heals anyway.
Oh, yeah, that's when you ditch it.
Nah.
Because in the original Pokemon, sleep is so freaking annoying.
Sleep is annoying, but it only has a 50% success rate. You're not getting put to sleep by very many things.
I don't look at numbers. I just... That way, I don't run the chance of being stuck for a turn. I could just use a Pokeflute and burn that turn. Because when he wakes up, he has to wait a turn anyways to move. So I might as well just immediately, Pokeflute, wake up, let's do this.
I used to do the same thing. I'll admit. But replaying this game a couple of times... Sleep's just not that much of a threat to take up a precious inventory space. You can only carry about like 20 things.
Your precious inventory space.
Yes, I know. So speaking of inventory space, in Earthbound, things like your map, your phone, you have this ATM card, You have a sound stone, which is just basically a tool for collecting. Like at the end of a dungeon, you beat the boss and you collect a thing. The thing doesn't take up inventory space, but you have a thing in your inventory space that basically records a sound. Hmm. Why it needs to take up a space of inventory, I'm not sure. But it is what it is. And then you also have a lot of like consumable items that you find throughout. Things like food that restore your HP, which is usually good to have at the beginning of the game, but then toward the end of the game, it's just clutter. And then there's these totally useless, pointless items that you can pick up or that you can buy. They sell them for some reason. There's things like the protractor. It has no function in the game. There is a ruler that one of your character, Jeff, he has. When you start with Jeff, he starts with a ruler and a protractor, and you should just immediately discard them both. They're useless. There is one use for the ruler throughout the game. It is a trade item that you need to give to a monkey so it steps out of your way in a dungeon. And there's one, like, lying on the ground next to him. Hmm. You just pick it up and you give it to him, and there's no reason to ever carry one of these things around with you. There are items that you pick up that you don't know if they're important or not. They might not be important right away, or you could need it later, and if you decide to hang on to it, it's taken up this inventory space that's really valuable. Or it might be important, but then stop being important for a while and then become important again later. There's specifically this item that's called a pencil eraser. And it doesn't do anything except it's basically cut. There are these silver pencils blocking specific paths in order to impede your progress in certain areas. And then when you have this pencil eraser, you can just knock it out of your way. However, there is one point of the game where they actually want to stop you from going in a certain direction. And then the other three or four times it comes up in the game, it's basically like, hey, remember that pencil eraser that you used to have? Go get it, because you're going to need it to get this out of your way. There's no reason. Like, it's not like a choice that you have to make whether to go through route A or route B. They're not trying to block you from progressing. They're just trying to remind you, like, hey, there's this thing in your way. You remember how to get it out of the way? Better go get the thing.
That's pretty obnoxious.
So you can go back and get the stuff?
Sort of. And that leads me to my next point.
Oh, yay!
There is an item... You sure did. There's an item storage system. And basically what you have to do to store items that you no longer need or want to stash for later is you have to call your sister. And she will send someone to go and get the stuff that you don't need.
Oh my god.
It costs you $18. And you can only take 3 at a time. So if you have to store 4 things, you're going to have to call them, go outside, walk around for a second, the delivery man will show up, take your stuff, you pay him, he'll leave. You go back, you call her again. And you pay the $18 again just to have them come back to get the one more thing.
Perspective is $18 a significant amount of money in this game?
Not really. Not really. It's pretty paltry sum. But there are some other economy issues that you run into throughout the game.
This seems like it's pretty, pretty grounded in reality if they have phones and... Delivery services and $18.
$18 human dollars. $18 human dollars, yeah. It's actually using U.S. currency here.
Oh, is it set in America?
It is supposed to be set in America. It's called Eagle Land. It is supposed to be like this take on America.
That's us. That's totally us. It's Eagle Land.
It's this really Japanese view of what America is. And one of the things people like about this game is the setting. And this is a very fun setting. It's not like anything else you see in a Super Nintendo. It's all very like contemporary 90s. There's just kids walking around getting into fights with, like, stray dogs and hippies and shit.
So kind of like our view of the Japanese in Dokuboon Kingdom, when you go into one of those towns of the first continent. They're like, meow, it's just incredibly racist.
It is racist.
They've got the triangle hat.
It is absolutely racist. That's also Chinese.
Whatever. Same continent.
That's what you're going to say. You're going to say same continent.
I almost said the same thing, but that's also very racist. So, because it's definitely not.
Do you want
not.
Me to cut you being racist here or not? I was trying to bail you out.
Well,
you probably should.
Ever heard of the term weeaboo? For people that are basically, like, just Americans that are obsessed with Japanese culture.
Yeah, there's an appreciation for Japanese culture. Sure.
Somebody was talking about the creator of the Metal Gear franchise, because he clearly loves American espionage.
Yeah.
And somebody described him as a Westaboo. It's hilarious. A Japanese guy that's obsessed with American culture.
This
is a Westaboo game.
Kojima, that's the guy's name.
Yes.
And he does really have an appreciation for Western culture, specifically American. But his games, they still have these really like Japanese philosophies of design behind them. Things like makes like these really what we would consider weird connections to like what you can do with items or what you can do with the environment in certain situations. Like Metal Gear Solid 5, things that people praise about that game is like if you're presented with a situation, there are 4, 5, 6, like however many different ways you can imagine out of that situation. You can try anything and a lot of things will work. And just really strange things that you can do that seem strange to us, but I'm sure like if someone from like Japan plays Fallout, it probably seems very strange to them. There's still like this cultural gap that even though there's a lot of crossover with the games like going to different territories, there's still very distinct philosophies of design.
I just started playing Fallout 4.
What do you think?
It's good. I'll talk about it on the main show.
It's a hot take right there.
It's a hot take. That's great. Is this drive time radio we're doing right now?
What the hell?
Thanks for calling in, Wes.
All right. I'll leave it. Goodbye, guys. It's been fun doing the show with you guys.
So what do you think of Earth?
So you think the Yankees just throw it all away and try to rebuild, or you think they try to make something happen and take a push for the playoffs?
All right.
This show is...
Part of me, I'll take on that subject for a second here.
Do we just turn this into a mini show at this point?
I might think that's where it's going. But I think that I would be really happy to see them throw in the towel because they don't do it very often. Mm-hmm. But the troll in me wants to see them keep trying because I know they're going to fail.
Uh-huh.
So they could throw in the towel. They could, you know, start rebuilding toward next year and trade away some of their veteran players. Like Carlos Beltran is a name that comes up a lot. Mm-hmm. Someone who actually could get them some return, bring up some of their younger guys and, you know, start building toward the future. I want to see them suck.
Yeah.
So, no, they should hang on to everybody.
You want to pour gasoline on the fire.
Sure do. So anyway, Earthbound.
So how about that basketball?
Stop it.
There was the finals on Sunday.
I don't know what you're talking about. What happened? I've been busy.
Nobody here watches basketball.
I wanted to see Golden State win because, you know, they had such a good season.
Oh, it's true. Like, I've been talking about Golden
really,
State.
Really, really deserve it.
I've been talking about Golden State so much.
Yeah, that's why I know about this stuff.
Didn't they have the best record in NBA history?
Yeah, they did. Yeah. They still
have. At the same time, I still also did not want Cleveland to win because I hate LeBron. I don't know why. It's just, I really hate the guy.
I still don't know what to think about it. It's very
so
weird.
Much hatred. Finals. You either love LeBron or hate the guy with everything in you. I don't understand.
I think he's okay.
But he came back from a 3-1 deficit and they won. So, I mean, rock on. Good for him.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not like upset or, you know, crying in my beer about the outcome of it. I'm fine with, you know, Cleveland winning. Good for them. But yeah, just a bizarre finals. Very, very weird. I don't know. I think Golden State will probably be back there next year.
Mm. So, Earthbound is a video game.
Hot takes.
Yeah. And, I was talking about the economy and like how you need to have this $18 if you want to switch around to items. There are also, I better start at the beginning. You get money for winning battles like any RPG, but you don't get the money immediately. What happens is you win a battle and basically your dad will deposit money in your bank. You don't actually collect money from the stray dogs and the hippies because hippies don't have any fucking money.
And these are the people you're fighting.
Right. Right.
Or the enemies you're fighting.
Right. You
stray dogs and hippies.
Right. Going around beating up snakes and crows and shit.
Okay.
And cockroaches. So you get basically every battle will net you a certain amount of cash, but you don't actually get the cash and prize money. Your dad's just giving you an allowance. And if you're beating up more enemies, you're getting a bigger allowance. And you call him, he'll tell you, hey, put this much in your bank, and then you take your ATM card, which is money, it's an item you have to walk around with, to withdraw your money from any ATM. So don't ever stash that ATM card, you're going to run into some serious problems here. Something else that the game does is it requires you to have money for certain things that are prerequisites for continuing progression. There are a lot of points in the game where you have to spend the night at a hotel. And spending a night at a hotel, again, it's not a huge drop in the bucket. Like, by the time you're getting deep into the game, every time you're entering a new town, completing an area, you call your dad and he's like, hey, I put $10,000 in your account. Like,
whoa, thanks,
great,
Dad.
Fucking great. That's awesome.
Thanks, Dad.
Staying at the Ritz.
Mm-hmm.
Which, how's that not throw a red flag? So, I mean, just a bunch of little four young children Well, I would get a room in this.
That's how things are in America. That's fine. Weird. No. Yeah. You pay cash at hotels, and kids are allowed to stay as long as they want.
Yeah.
Didn't you see Home Alone 2?
Oh, by mistake. Well, he lived in a rundown building, didn't he?
Who?
No. That's right. That's just where he set up the traps.
Yeah, they have that, like, fuck, we might as well talk about Home Alone 2. They have that, there's like a throwaway line of dialogue at the beginning. I don't know how I remember so much about this movie, but there's a throwaway line of dialogue. Something about, like, his brother living in New York. Like, oh, he can go to his house. And the mom says, like, oh, well, aren't they renovating? And then at the end, he goes to the house, and he sets up all these traps, and this house is being renovated.
This house is being renovated?
Yeah, it's being...
Holy crap, they did a terrible job in the house.
Well, they're in the process. I don't know why they're not there to oversee it.
It looks like
happening.
They're building the house. But yeah, like, the thing has been, like, incontent.
Yeah, they tore that shit down.
Holy crap.
And then he ends up throwing bricks at... Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern.
I mean, who doesn't want to do?
They are national treasures, sir. Where were we?
Dustin checks in.
Please, so, always one day we can do an episode where we talk about Dustin checks in.
Sure, fine, whatever. So there are times where you have to stay in a hotel in order to activate something in the story to allow you to go to the next area. And there are other times where you have to spend cash in some way in order to keep on moving forward. So, what happens if you don't know what that ATM card is for and you deposit it? Or what happens if you've just been spending a ton of money on healing items, even though you should? You should always just, like, stay at the hotels as a better way of managing your money. So, there are ways that you can keep on getting more money, but it is conceivable that... if you're playing the game and spending a lot of money on restorative items, you could run out of cash, then have to spend money to stay the night at a hotel, not have the cash to do it, then have to backtrack to where enemies are easier and basically grind for money in order to just keep on moving forward in the game.
Well, that's about as bad as game design can be. Right, I mean, yeah. what more tortured construct can you have in a game than a currency?
Right. Right?
Like, that's just... pointless.
Right, and I don't understand why, from a design and from a progression standpoint, why you would need to have an ATM. Like, all RPGs just award you the money at the end of the battle. Why was that something that was cut? And I think it was for basically atmosphere, so you have a reason to call your dad on the phone. They could have just made something just as artificial, a reason to call your dad. Like, you do have to call him to save, so that there's a reason for it right there. I'm not really saving in the Wii U version because there's save restore points, so save states, so whatever, it doesn't matter.
Are you missing out on dialogue there?
Not really. You call him up, he says, this is how much money I put in your bank, this is how much more experience you need to level up, which is something you can just see in a menu, and do you want to save? There is, like, there's this, like, really weird status condition called homesick, and only Ness can get it. And basically, when Ness gets homesick, you don't have any warning for it. And then he becomes ineffective in battle. He can't perform any actions. And to cure this, you have to call your mom or go all the way back home and visit her. It's really annoying when you're in the middle of a dungeon and all of a sudden Ness is homesick. And there doesn't seem to be a way to prevent it. So,
I was going to say, can you preempt it? Can you just call mom every once in a while?
I've tried. Sometimes it just triggers anyway. I can't seem to really predict how often this is going to happen or when.
Well, it's kind of funny. It's such a bizarre little thing, a touch in this series to be so like Pokemon, mm-hmm. where, you know, your mom just stores your money for you.
Yeah.
And like you're constantly calling her. Every version of the game seems to have some kind of phone mechanism you have to call home.
Yeah, but what came out first? This or Pokemon Silver, where they had the phone mechanic?
This did. Pokemon didn't come out in the US until 98, 99. Yeah,
exactly.
Like,
so, I mean, this isn't like they took it from... Pokemon took this from this.
And did I phrase it that way? I didn't mean it that way.
There are also these methods of progression that require these really strange leaps of logic. And it's not strange for an RPG to require you to, like, talk to someone weird or do something strange in order to keep on moving forward in the game, but this takes it to a whole new level. This game, when it was released, came with a guide, and it's a good thing it did because you're going to need it. There are items you have to use in certain places that is just, you wouldn't really think to do that there. There are people that you have to talk to there's no real indication that you have to talk to them. There are points in the game where you progress past something, you go to a new town, you encounter a couple characters, then there's nothing to do, so it does that thing where it requires you to stay in a hotel, and then you have to backtrack to a previous area where there was previously nothing, now something new is happening there, but there's not really much indication that something was going on.
Do you think it's like akin to the way of thinking you were talking about earlier with Metal Gear, of all things? Like, where it's just maybe a different culture would approach these things differently? Or do you think this is just sloppy design?
I think some of it might be that, like, at the time, because it's not like RPGs don't do this kind of stuff. But I think that a lot of what was happening here was trying to serve a narrative. That was their first goal, is to tell this intricate story, and a lot of design things suffered because of it. So I don't think that they set out to, like, make this obtuse
RPG. So they have a story, and they're going to wrap the game around it no matter what?
Right, right. I don't know, there's just really big design issues that really progress, or really keep progression from being intuitive. But the game's not all bad. And I did talk about some positive things the last time we talked about this game. I think that the battle system has some really nice innovations and some really user-friendly twists. So as un-user-friendly as the inventory and the economy are, there are some really cool things about the battles. They're not random. It's nice. You see them, like, see your enemies walking around, and there are a lot of times you can avoid them. There's this cool trick that you can use. I'm not sure if it's an actual feature of the game, but it's something you can do. If there's, like, a group of enemies and you don't want to fight them all, because what will happen is you'll run into one, and if there's any enemies nearby that are aware of your presence, they'll all rush in as well, and you have to fight them all at once. So what you can do is, if there's a group, you can just backtrack. Just get them all out of the screen. Like, walk away, like, a screen and a half. And then walk back, and, like, the spawns will be different. So some of the enemies might be gone, or there might be no enemies there at all, which is kind of nice. There's also this HP counter, which is pretty cool. So rather than, like, if you get hit with an attack, rather than all of your HP calculations being done right then, basically it starts ticking down. And your HP will continue to dwindle until you've taken all that damage, or until the battle's over. So if you have, like, 300 HP and someone hits you with a really heavy attack that does 400 damage, if you can wrap up the battle before that all ticks down, you're still alive, and you don't need to go to a hospital to heal, or you don't need to, like...
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. You don't need to use a consumable Phoenix Down, basically. I forget what they're called in this game, like Cup of Life Noodles or something like that.
Is this the one, or was it the other one, where if you go behind them, you do a surprise attack or something?
Yeah, you can do that as well.
Did you say that RA and I zoned out?
No.
Okay.
No, I didn't bring that up, but it's a good point, because you can initiate battles to where you have that immediate advantage of being able to execute a full round of turns before they get to use any turns. It's hard to do. It's hard to sneak up on enemies in this game. But what they do is, like, a really smart thing that they did is, when you clear a dungeon boss and you get the MacGuffin at the end of the dungeon, all enemies in that dungeon will run from you. So you basically have to backtrack through the entire dungeon to get back to where you were and start at the next area. So instead of, like, forcing you to go through all these battles again, there's, like, never mind, just make all enemies run from you.
And if you want to fight them, you can chase them down.
And you're always getting those back attacks.
Cool.
Another really cool thing that they did is, once you're at a significant level to where you would just take out an enemy really easily, it doesn't even force you to fight the battle. You run into an enemy, the screen flashes, like, hey, he's dead. Here's all your experience that you got from that battle.
Nice.
So yeah, it's
that's actually really convenient.
Yeah, it's a really nice way of streamlining it, and it's actually pretty handy when you've cleared out a dungeon, because most of the time it seems once you've cleared a dungeon, you're at a good enough level to take out all the enemies within fairly efficiently. So you can go around and just back attack all these enemies and get these really easy wins just to build up a bit more experience and a bit more cash. So there are some really user-friendly things to the battle system in this game. There's also these butterflies that float around. Like, a lot of your actions are, or a lot of your success, rather, is really dependent on your MP being able to use your spells in a lot of situations. And there are these butterflies that will float around. And there's usually, like, one that spawns in a specific area in a dungeon. And you touch the butterfly, it doesn't restore your MP fully, but it gives you a decent chunk. Then you can leave that room, re-enter, it'll be back. So there are ways that you can kind of game the system in order to give yourself a replenish before boss fights and things. What a lot of people like about this game is we talked about it before, the setting and the story. I think two of the things people talk about the most when they talk about this game is those two things. And like we talked about before, it does have a lot of similarities to Pokemon, that sort of modern contemporary aesthetic. It's not really something that you see in a whole lot of other Super Nintendo games. It's a unique experience. You do not get anything else like that on the Super Nintendo, which makes it worth playing. I think it's definitely something you're going to want a guide for. Starmen.net, actually, it's like a fan site that started up, you know, in the early days of the internet that really became like a huge advocate for this game and this game series. They have a really good guide on their website for this game. Sometimes they sort of overinflate what level you need to be at in order to get through certain areas. Like, there's a point in the game, they're like, oh, you're going to want to be at level 45 to 50, so do some grinding. I was like at level 39. Nah, I just worked my way through it. It was fine. It's a game that I think, if you like Super Nintendo games and Super Nintendo RPGs, that it's worth playing. You can play it by spending $175 on a cart on Amazon.
Yeah, of course. That's what you should do. Sure.
Well, that's what Wes does.
I'm doing right now. Yeah. Right, where's my phone?
Or you could download it on the Wii U or the new 3DS for $10.
Oh, $159.
Yeah, $159.99. $10. And it's absolutely the route you should go, because you can use save states, which is something that you should be using in this game, like before boss fights or when you successfully complete a...
Is there anything random in the game that you can exploit with your save states?
Not that I can think of. There's actually a really cool exploit that I didn't know about before that the Starmen.net guide clued me into. There's a item called a magic truffle. And magic truffle, it's so weirdly hidden. There is a guy in a random room in a hospital that will say something. I forget what his line of dialogue is, but it's weird and it doesn't particularly stand out from any other NPC. And then in the next town over, there is an item in a drawer in a hospital room, and it's called an insignificant item. And you give it to the guy in the hospital in the previous town, and it gives you a magic truffle. It's a bizarre sequence of events, and it doesn't really make sense, and I don't know how anyone figured it out without a guide. What this magic truffle does is it restores a ton of your MP. And you can use this exploit where you have it as your last thing in your inventory slot for a particular character, which moving things around in your inventory is fucking annoying. Because what I like to do, I have this way of trying to organize things where I have my equipment up top and then my key items that I need to hang on to and then all the consumable stuff at the bottom. And it's annoying because anytime you buy something like a new piece of equipment, you buy it, you equip it, and then you sell your old one. They actually make it really easy to do that. I'll say that about this game. When you buy a piece of equipment, the salesman will say, do you want to equip it now? Do you want me to buy your old one? And it's pretty easy just to change out equipment like that. Huh. But then it always drops it down to the bottom of your inventory list because it's a new item. And in order to rearrange things, you have to use this mechanic where you can switch items between characters by giving it to them. So you open up a menu, you select an item, you select give, then you select the character you want to give it to. You basically give it to yourself. Uh-huh. And then it drops it all the way to the bottom of your list. So what you need to do with this magic truffle is make sure it's at the bottom of your list, so you have to give to yourself. And then you have to have these items. They're consumable items, but they're basically red herbs in Resident Evil. They don't do anything by themselves, but they enhance your other consumable food.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And when you're in a battle, you use the magic truffle, and as long as it's the last thing on your list and you have like a packet of ketchup is one of these other items that I was talking about, it will restore your PP by a ton, but use the ketchup rather than the truffle. Otherwise, it's going to use the truffle, okay. And so it's a one-use item and it's gone forever. Mm-hmm. So there's a cool little exploit that somebody found that is a good way to get through some of the tougher dungeons. But I think I only used that exploit once. I was like, okay, well, I'm going to try to play the game without that. So just pay the $18 and have the guy come take it away.
Yeah.
Anyway, any games you guys want to bring up before we close it out? Should we just
call it quits here? Yeah, I don't have any right now. I mean, and it's I've got to plan a little better next time around.
That's
something
right.
To talk about, because I got to bring something to the table.
Here. We did just go on about Earthbound for 40 minutes, so I think we're good.
Kinda.
And E.T. So
and the Yankees and basketball. Mm-hmm. And
sure.
Other topics were broached. Yes. And, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Stuff. Words.
And actually, a game that Earthbound reminds me of is no. Sorry. I should reverse that. Citizens of Earth reminds me of Earthbound, which is the code that I just gave you from Humble Bundle.
Cool.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, thank you. I got some as well.
Cool. Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Ryan, wow, he really got a lot of stuff there.
Well, there's a couple of Wii U games.
Oh, yeah, okay. I got Swords and Soldiers 2, Street Fighter 4, and Affordable Space Adventures.
Oh, that's so good.
Nice. Affordable Space Adventures. So good. I got Citizens of Earth and
Nano
Assault EX.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Next up is going to be the official show. Well, games to talk about.
Big things are happening.
We got like E3, I guess we could talk about.
Yeah, I guess we could talk about. We'll probably do some talk about Zelda.
Yeah.
It'll probably be time for that. And
I have no idea what else.
Oh, have you clocked in time on that RPG that you're. The Shin Megami Tensei, I think it is?
Comes out tomorrow.
Okay.
So I'll clock some time in that before we do the show. But we got Kirby Planet Robobot, which I spend a lot of time in, and Mighty No. 9. That'll be a fun discussion.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And yeah, and Tokyo Mirage Sessions, so it'll be a full show. So, till next time, everybody.
Sayonara.
Later.